Good afternoon, everyone. Good afternoon, everyone. That sounds better. For those who are listening that weren't listening to the previous hearing, we had some breakdown in some electronic equipment in the hearing room, and so we have some new equipment. It's still under adjustment, so excuse us if some things happen like just happened a couple moments ago. I'm Randy Christman, Chairman of the Public Service Commission. This is an informal hearing in case number PU-15-416, Highland Crude LLC, the Newtown Expansion Project up in Montreal County. It's a siting application. With me here today is Commissioner Fedorchak and Commissioner Crashus, as well as our Public Utilities Director, Patrick Fawn, and Steve Call from staff. I'll have your company folks give your name on the record here in a moment. I want to emphasize this is an informal hearing. If there are any facts in and it is broadcast, if there are any facts that are in dispute, we will end the hearing and go to a regular formal hearing process. But if not, we will use the information presented to us today to make a decision on the case. If you want to go through and again, you just need to use the microphone, have it at least reasonably close so the recording picks it up with your names.
Absolutely. My name is Andrew McCraw. I'm Director of Project Management for Kinder Morgan.
Bill Wolf. I'm Assistant General Counsel for Kinder Morgan, parent company of Highland Crude.
Jess Coleman, Operations Manager for the Crude Oil Division.
Lawrence Bender, Counsel for Highland Crude LLC in this matter.
Okay, thank you. I don't have any opening comments. Commissioner Crashus, do you?
I do not.
Okay, I'll turn it over to Commissioner Fedorchak. It's her portfolio, and then the company can make their presentation.
All right, very good. Thank you all for being here. This has been an interesting project, starting with a conversion and a few other things added on. And so I thought that an informal was the best way to handle this latest request so we could just have kind of an open discussion about it. Pat, I know, has been in touch with you with some questions. So we can either just go straight to Q&A, or if you guys have any sort of a presentation you want to make, I don't know how you'd like to prefer. I have some questions, but I'd be happy to defer to you guys if you have some opening comments or if you have a presentation that you want to talk through first.
Mr. Chairman and Commissioner Fedorchak, I was planning on, you know, giving a brief outline, but you've already touched on the fact that this has been before the commission previously in the terms of a conversion of a gathering line to a transmission line. We came back at a later date and asked for some additional pumping stations. That was approved, and now we're here for the third time, which is a request to increase the volume. Right now, the volume is 36,000 barrels. We're requesting that it go up to 85,000 barrels. I could go into a few things in terms of you know, the dates all this was approved. I think what I would add is I did hand out a map, and particularly for Commissioner Crosh's benefit, he wasn't involved in any of the hearings. I think he's been put on the commission since that time. The pipeline runs from an area near Newtown, a place called Newtown Station. It runs north approximately 42 and a half miles to a Kinder Morgan site known as White Earth Station. Currently, the maximum operating pressure is 1,440 PSIG. There's not going to be a change with respect to that, even though there will be an increase in the volume from 36,000 barrels to 85,000 barrels if this application is approved. The maximum operating pressure will not change. And I guess perhaps just in closing, I think that's the point we want to make here today, and it addresses many of the questions that Mr. Fawn passed along to me, is there really not going to be any change in terms of the operation. The operation is really going to stay the same, other than the fact that we're going to be moving more oil through this pipeline. So I guess in that respect, you know, we have three witnesses here. They're prepared to answer any questions that you might have.
So help me understand how the operating doesn't change if you are moving more oil through it. You just, how do you get it, how do you get more through if you don't change somehow what you're operating, how you're operating it?
So, you know, with a viscous liquid like crude, fluid loses pressure due to frictional losses in the pipe, contact with the inside of the pipe, the properties of the fluid cause that to lose pressure. The original application utilized the pumping facilities that were on, that were associated with the pipeline at that time. So that 36,000 barrels a day was not the ultimate capacity of what a 8-inch pipe can move. So by putting additional pumping stations, we repressure the crude up as it loses pressure due to its movement through the pipe, along the pipe, increasing the amount that we can move down the pipe.
Okay, so really, correct me if I'm wrong, maybe when you applied for the pump stations or let us know about that, this could have been done at the same time. Had you been, or was it just an oversight that you didn't increase the
No, it wasn't an
capacity at that point?
I'm sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt you, Commissioner. No, it wasn't an oversight, and no, we could not have done it at the same time, because that was an application that we were able to make under the footprint law, mm-hmm. and all we had to do was certify certain things, and that could be approved.
Sure.
This is something that can't be done under the footprint law.
Right. But there's been a six, you could have maybe done them at the same time but separate?
Yes. And, okay. And Commissioner, we've done things like that before, mm-hmm. for some of my other clients. We've had situations where we've used the footprint law to put in another pipe, loop the pipe, and then we've probably added to that pipe, and we've had basically two applications mm-hmm. that are filed simultaneously under two separate parts of the Siting Act. I suppose we could have done that here. Had one in terms of the request under the notice and opportunity for hearing to increase the amount of volume, and then the footprint law to put the two pumping state,
sure.
the two additional pumping units. We didn't do that. We filed one, and then we filed the second one.
Okay. What goes into the calculations for the maximum design flow?
For the maximum design flow?
Yeah.
I believe I have that sheet in front of me. There's several equations we use. We model that. It's based on the viscosity of the fluid, the amount of the initial pressure, the length of the pipe that we're using. There's a roughness factor with the pipe. We can if you internally coat a pipe or use a drag reducing agent that reduces that friction and reduces that pressure loss. So for the most part, it's pressure as well as specific gravity of the mm-hmm. of the fluid.
And do you typically look at a design of a pipe and say what's the maximum? What would be the maximum capacity, the maximum design flow, and just plan for that, or do you back it off for some reason? So I'm trying to get, what I'm trying to understand is how did it ever end up at 36,000 versus 85,
well,
if that's the maximum?
I can offer a part explanation. There's a technical explanation for that as well, Commissioner, but partly in terms of how we deploy capital is from a Kinder Morgan perspective, we don't typically build on spec. We build where we have contracts that support that. So, you know, our initial build out will be based on the commercial contracts that we have that supports the construction of the facilities. We wouldn't build an 18-inch pipeline where an 8-inch pipeline will do. We right size our projects. So this line was originally built for gathering to move crude really the other direction from the way it's currently being used after our conversion. And it's primarily as to how the producers that we backstop with midstream support are now looking to move their product. So with new markets like DAPL coming online, with markets in Door and the Double H pipeline that takes oil south, we now have customers looking to move product different ways. So we're now looking at maximizing the capacities of our system through minimally invasive construction, where instead of building a looped pipeline or laying a second pipeline, we could do so through the installation of pumps or booster stations, some along those lines. So at least commercially, we have a desire to right-size our facilities, and I'm sure, Andrew, there's many technical reasons for that as well.
So if I could just summarize that in layman's terms, you got more customers, and now you need capacity.
Well, it's not so much getting more customers. It's that with the lower commodity price environment that we see our current customers redeploying their rigs and drilling their acreage much differently. There is a price differential between different areas of the Bakken formation where even in lower environments there is drilling, it just becomes more focused in certain areas. So
your customers are producing.
Our customers are producing more. They're producing more in a more concentrated area, requiring us to deploy infrastructure to accommodate that through pipeline takeaway capacity and elimination of rail or truck.
And are the pipes up and running, or the pumps up and running yet?
Yes, ma'am, they are.
So you're probably currently operating at 85,000?
We are not.
Okay,
we're currently operating within our current certificated levels. Okay. We would be able to operate at the higher level pending commission approval of our application.
All right. Patrick, what were some of the other questions we talked about?
I'm sure we had this previously, but I don't recall. What's at the receiving end of this? Is it what pipeline does it go into, or is it a where is it going?
At the end, at the White Earth Station, then it will pump into our Market Center system.
Okay, that's the one that we've had several segments of over the years. Okay.
Does that feed DAPL at some point?
There is an interconnection with that system in DAPL. I do not know if it's currently operational or if it's under construction.
It's operational.
It's operational.
What other export lines does that connect with?
Our Double H pipeline, which is at Door, which takes product and turns it into Baker.
Yep.
And there is an interconnection with a Targa facility, I believe. I don't recall for sure, Andrew. I don't know if
some of the other pipeline, just do you?
Yeah, we connect to make deliveries to several other folks, Enbridge, Plains, and then Savage Rail.
Sure.
Then, of course, the Double H, which you mentioned. Those are our main connections. And then DAPL. Okay.
Thanks.
Some of the other questions we had dealt with. integrity management plan for the pipeline, or emergency plan for the pipeline, spill response plans, operation and maintenance plans. And how does this increased throughput affect those, and do you have to revise those?
I can take it. So our integrity management plan is not based on throughputs. So the way we manage the pipeline today is exactly the same that we'll manage it if this is approved. As far as our spill response, we have emergency response plans. Those are based on line fill, not on throughputs. As far as our response goes, we would have an initial response, and then based on the required response, we would adjust our resources. That would just be on a case-by-case basis. But as far as updating the emergency response plan, it's just each segment is based on line fill, and so this will not impact line fill.
Can you go through the difference between line fill and throughput?
So line fill would be if the line was full and oil is non-compressible. So per foot, you have so many so many barrels per mile and so on. Mm-hmm. Throughputs being the amount of oil that passes through in any given period.
So basing it on line fill is basically giving you the maximum amount at any particular time in any particular location.
Correct. Okay. If the throughputs increase, there's still the same amount of oil in that pipe at any given time. It's just the oil is traveling faster through that line, but point A to point B, that fill is still the same.
So I guess you assume the same response time as far as maybe shutting down a section of line. You assume the same response time, therefore there isn't any more oil
that's
in that
correct.
Piece of pipe.
That's correct.
Then at whatever throughput. It's the same amount.
So this is a very non-engineering question, but it just something I've never thought to ask. Are the pipelines, when they're not operating at their maximum, are they still full? Or are they half full? Or no, they're still full, it's just less pressure.
So we have a minimum line pack that we maintain to prevent air in our pipelines because we have upset, can have an upset on your tank and so on. Mm-hmm. So we have a minimum line pack, which in this case would be 200 PSI. So it's okay. Always full.
I'm going to confess, I was going to ask the same thing.
Never thought to ask that question. No. It just was an assumption I had made in my mind that was inaccurate. So,
and what is the PSI going to go to? It's, what is that, 36,000 barrels, and what would it be at?
The line
same
is,
PSI?
The pressure of the line is not going to change.
That's going to stay.
Currently 1440, and under the new application, it would still be at 1440 PSI.
Okay.
Maximum.
Correct.
But you're not operating at that on a regular basis.
No. Not as of today.
In order to get to the 85,000, you have to go to the 1440? To the 85,000 throughput?
No, ma'am.
No? Those are disconnected?
Yes, they're disconnected. We'll bring it up to a pressure we determine, you know, whether that be 900, 1,000 pounds, and then it falls as it moves through the pipeline. So subsequent pumps will bring it back up to that,
I see.
To that pressure.
So you haven't done the calculation to determine what that pressure might be with this throughput, this higher throughput?
Well, we need to maintain a minimum pressure at the wide earth station. So that pressure is around 900 to 1,000 pounds. It varies depending on where this is it's a dynamic system. Mm-hmm. We have our drilling partners throughout the area bringing in crude to this pipeline, so the local pressure varies depending on when and where the crude's coming in through the dam. So it's not a set discharge pressure, a set mm-hmm. maximum pressure at any point.
And it varies based on where you're taking the pressure reading, right?
Correct.
So this line is a little, well, it in my mind, it feels a little different than a lot of the other transmission lines we do because there are direct feeders, direct inputs from gathering systems into this line. Correct. Along this route. How do you use the leak detection systems in those scenarios? Is it more challenging when you've got a lot more inputs to the system and a lot more product in to the system at different locations to keep track of? So like the measurement of the total product in and total product out is harder to calculate and therefore not as easy to detect if there's an anomaly, in my understanding. Help correct me if I'm wrong in that assumption.
I can take that. As far as our current leak detection, we have pressure transmitters at the locations, and then the pumps along the system have suction and discharge. So we have a minimum suction. So if you operate within a certain window, say that the suction requirement for the pump is 50 pounds, and historically your trend is, 25 to 50, and then we'll have a low alarm on that suction. Number one, it'll shut that pump off, but then it also will trigger an alarm to the control room and a call out, why is that below that historic trend? And the same is on the discharge. If we normally discharge, historically from 800 to 1,000 PSI, and all of a sudden we're discharging 100 PSI or 200 PSI, we're going to have a low discharge alarm, and then that'll go to the control room, and then we'll be bringing people out. So the way that the line is monitored today is through pressure transmitters and communication to our control room in Houston.
And Jess, you touched on this, but is the installation of additional pumps, is that an advantage or assistance to Highlands in monitoring the pressure?
Yes, any additional pump station that we put in is just more data for us. We have more points of, for pressure readings and so on.
So you're really not using the kind of system that Commissioner Fedorchak was describing with the measurement of the... Mm-hmm. the fluid lines in.
We have mass flow on either end of that pipeline. We don't have incremental flow off of the individual wells. So again, that would detect a failure in the pipeline, input and output, mass input and output.
Mm-hmm. Lawrence, is your understanding correct that this is a little different than a lot of the transmission lines? Would I be correct in making that assumption, or is it just that we don't know that all these other lines are going into the transmission lines that we've cited previously?
I think it's probably a little of both, Commissioner, in the sense that a lot of transmission lines don't have these situations where you have gathering lines that are injecting into a transmission line. But in some cases, they're out there or they might be added after the transmission line is approved by the commission and you're not aware of it. So I think it's a little of both.
Okay.
Perhaps something to add, Commissioner, is that, you know, either the oil is produced and gathered into transmission or it's trucked or railed into transmission. So, you know, from our experience, I mean, we do have many gathering lines that do feed into our market center system or the Newtown line. So I'm not sure we would think of this as any different other than standard operating procedure, because mm-hmm. the oil always comes from somewhere, and it's not coming from us. We don't produce it ourselves. So whether or not we own gathering systems ourselves or our customers do, or there's some form of injection point where things are coming out of storage or out of rail or out of truck, you know, to us, I think we all treat it the way that Jess described it earlier. It's that the oil is coming to us from somewhere. It's getting pumped into our market center system at a pressure. We monitor those pumps on both suction and discharge, and that's sort of the entry point into our transmission line.
Mm-hmm. How much of it comes in on gathering lines, then into the transmission line? If you had to break it down between gathering lines, rail car, or trucks, and I'm sure it's not a third, a third, a third, but do you have a ballpark breakdown on that?
Not a percentage basis, but I will say the overwhelming majority comes in from the gathering lines.
It does.
Directly into the pipe.
Okay.
Without storage beforehand.
Without storage.
That has gone up incrementally over the course of time and will continue to rise over the course of time, I would imagine.
We hope so.
Right. Well, Andrew, without storage, but, okay. But it all is batched into our system, right?
Correct.
I mean, so the oil would be gathered. It would be gathered into perhaps not a long-term storage tank, but a tank where the delivery could then be batched, pumped into our system. So it's not like, I don't think, Jess or Andrew, it's a free flow of crude oil.
No, off the wellhead, it's put into 400-barrel storage tanks, and those are producer-owned on producer locations.
Right.
And then we're pumping out of those tanks into our
still tanks. Down a gathering line into directly
Correct.
Into the line. Okay. Well, that's definitely a significant difference in my mind on managing or using the leak detection. I always took comfort in the fact that I thought the transmission lines were sort of separate, and so you could get a flow in and a flow out without all the complications of a bunch of different entry points that along the way. So, I mean, it's just not that I'm saying it's bad. It's just different than how I understood it, and now I need to better understand. And this is not the venue; those monitoring devices into the transmission lines, and how those are, you know, what you described. I can't even repeat what you said, but something about valves and detection in and the suction, all of that. I don't get that.
It's mostly pressure. You're monitoring pressure on all points on the line to see if there's a drop somewhere that would is not normal.
Going from 1,000 PSI to, you had mentioned earlier, a drop of one, you know, if it went down to 100 or 200, but it would trigger before that, wouldn't it?
Correct. So we have operational alarms in the field that the pumps operate from, and starts and stops, kills, alarms, and so on. The control room has a separate, you know, they see those, but then they have criteria under their operating procedures, tolerance windows, and so on, and which, you know, in which they'll shut something down mm-hmm. and make a call out. And I can't speak to what their procedures are in the controls.
A lot of that's based on rate of change. If the pressure suddenly falls or the flow suddenly falls that they're monitoring at the control room, that triggers an alarm to them as well.
Okay.
But the pressure on the gathering lines is a lot lower. Correct? The pressure that on those lines feeding the transmission line, the pressure on those lines.
Not necessarily. They are the gathering lines are rated at 1440 psi as well.
Mm. It probably can't be lower. The oil would go the wrong way.
Wouldn't get it in.
Exactly.
Right. So, okay, this is a question for Lawrence then. Why isn't if you have storage from the well, you have oil coming into the storage and you have a pump there, increases the pressure so that it can be injected into a transmission line. But our definitions in the law says storage and pressure.
You have to be off the lease, and these storage facilities are on the lease. If you look at the definition, it'll talk about lease storage, and it'll talk. I don't know if it uses the word lease storage, but if you're talking about tank batteries on the well site, mm-hmm. that's an exemption in terms of storage, and then it coming out of those storage tanks and being considered a transmission line. You'd have to take it off of the lease site, put it into another storage facility, and then add pressure, and then after that it would be considered a transmission line.
Is that just how it is in practice, or are those work? Because I've looked at that definition 1,000 times and never seen lease site, or I'm not looking to cite all those, believe me, yeah. But I don't think that it states that in the law that I've seen.
I think it does, actually.
It's always been a question that I've had, too.
Right.
They're over here, Lawrence. I don't know which one it is. But it's
maybe I didn't understand it, so I just read right through it.
So while we wait on that, so the pressure is just going to, by nature, drop. It's you can go through a pump station, it's pressured up. As it goes through the pipeline, it drops. When it drops to a certain point, you need another pump again.
Correct.
And so how do your sensors know how much it should have dropped and when to send off an alarm?
Well, it's looking at the pressure at that pump location. So as that pump's running, if it sees the pressure coming into the pump is at 200 pounds, if the pressure monitoring at that site sees that falls, we're not measuring pressure all the way across the pipeline. It's an individual point. So as that pressure falls at a certain rate that we determine is that we've determined is significant enough that there is a leak on the pipeline, then that's what causes it. We're not measuring along the pipe at the pump stations.
Is this your best way of detecting what's your leaks, the pressure drop?
That would be, that would be the way we would determine if there was a failure.
That's mm-hmm. right. So what are the weaknesses of that system? Where does it fall short?
Our system quite effectively. We are one of the best operators of pipeline infrastructure in the United States, and I think our leak occurrence is much below industry norms and standards, and we feel like we do a pretty darn good job of that with our existing infrastructure in place.
I don't have any evidence to suggest otherwise, but I'm just curious, what are the weaknesses of that system? What do you miss with that? What do you worry about? Like, what does it not detect?
I think Commissioner, you're asking us to prove a negative, and I'm not sure that we can do that. We feel like we've got all of our systems designed to meet or in many cases exceed what is required out of pipeline operators, and we feel like our systems as currently designed and operated do a very effective job of monitoring and mitigating any potential for leaks around our system. I'm not sure I could answer your question any other way.
Do Did you find anything that you wanted to share?
I did, and I'd be happy to share it. It says, for the purposes of this chapter, and I'm looking at the siting statute, for purposes of this chapter, a gathering system includes the pipelines and associated facilities used to collect oil from the lease site.
Okay.
So
good. There we go, Pat. We've always wondered how
where that comes from.
From the lease site. So any storage that's on the lease site is under that gathering system, it says right there. Even Lynn Helms couldn't explain that to us.
Was that right?
Yeah.
I thought everybody knew that was in there.
Well, we saw the lease site, but didn't think of it in that.
Oh, right.
Yeah, good. That's good to know. Pat, do we have other questions on that list that we were talking about ahead of time?
Well, we have, the standard questions in the notice. And I think Mr. Bender explained that the fact that the pressure isn't going over the 1440 is just the increase in throughput, that that these factors will be able to answer positively.
Mm-hmm.
The continue to produce minimal adverse effects because the pressure is not any higher, yes. Maximum flow continue to be compatible with environmental preservation, and we heard about how it doesn't change the integrity of the pipe, doesn't change the emergency plans, doesn't change the spill response plans or operation and maintenance. And whether operation of the pipeline facilities at the increased maximum flow rate at the existing location continue to minimize adverse human and environmental impact while ensuring continuing system reliability. That's the same kind of thinking, thought process there with the integrity plan, emergency plan, and spill response plan operations. All the same.
Okay.
The only thing we'd have in addition to this, Mr. Chairman, is in terms of timing. You heard the testimony. I guess I'll call it testimony. It wasn't sworn, but it was testimony as to how this is sort of a fluctuating situation. Sometimes there's an opportunity to take more oil, and with these flow rates currently at 36,000 barrels a day, we'd like the opportunity to get them up to 85,000 barrels a day. And I'm not in the habit of asking the commission questions, but what is the timing? Will this be considered at the next commission meeting, which I think you mentioned in the previous matter was July 12th, or if we submit a proposed order sooner, is that something that would be considered sooner? Just don't know the answer to that question, Mr. Chairman.
We've been having a very challenging time with our schedules getting things filled in. These next few weeks are really challenging. I guess one of the questions I have for Patrick as well as the other commissioners, is there any other things that you would like filed or any requests for further evidence for this case?
I don't have anything along those lines.
Okay. I think...
I don't either.
Okay, Ryan.
I do not.
I think I would just say, as soon as we would have a proposed order, I think we always try to do things as expeditiously as possible, and, if there was some way to do it sooner rather than later, we would. But I'm not sure that I can promise any particular day or...
All right. Well, we'll do our part and try to get a proposed order to you very quickly, and then we'll just hope for the best in terms of your having another meeting where you'd have an opportunity to consider it.
For my part, I don't have any long spells planned out of town, so I'll be around. And if my colleagues are available, even by phone, there's a chance we could do something sooner by a special meeting if we can get staff and everything done ahead of time.
Yeah, and so. I know we're rolling into the holidays too, and that's going to be difficult, but we'll try to get something to you very soon. So thank you.
We'll certainly take note of the point that it's not like you have to go and find contractors and such, that this is something that we'll try and move it along as quickly as possible.
Thank you very much.
Did you have anything else to add to the record?
I don't believe we have anything else, did you, Bill?
Mr. Chairman, Commissioners, if I could just offer one final thought. We do at Kinder Morgan pride ourselves on being just a class-leading operator of pipeline infrastructure. It's a reputation that we've worked very hard to get, and it's one we work even harder to keep. Certainly not in the context of this proceeding, but if there is anything that we as Kinder Morgan can do for the commission to help understand how our pipelines are operated, what our best practices are, how we approach designing and operating pipeline infrastructure, our company would love the opportunity to help you understand more and work collaboratively with the commission on those points.
I appreciate that. Is there any objection? I think the only evidence that we have here is the one-sheet map and then the verbal discussions. Is there any objection to that being added to the record for our decision-making?
No objection whatsoever here.
Okay. So the map and the verbal discussion will be added to the record for purposes of making a decision. And with that, this informal hearing is closed.